there, and welcome to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Bill Redwine, the Democratic candidate for the newly vacant Kentucky House seat in the 99th District. Bill, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Leanne.
Now, this district seat covers Elliott, Lewis, and Rowan counties. And as a longtime Morehead State University employee, of course, you're familiar with the district. But what made you want to run for the seat, especially in a special election, what's going to be held on February 25th?
Well, you know, I am familiar with the district. I grew up in Elliott County in Sandy Hook. Had some, you know, my parents were very involved in local government in Elliott County. My dad was county attorney for 16 years. My mom served on the city council in Sandy Hook, and they helped found the Sandy Hook Water District. So it's kind of been in our family to be involved and to give back to the community all my life. So Rocky Adkins and I grew up together. We've been friends since we were 5 or 6 years old, have followed each other's careers. So, you know, of course, living in Morehead for 40 years, worked at Morehead State University for 38 years. During that tenure, I always tried to be as helpful for students as I possibly could, particularly students from home. And now we just throw Lewis County in there. I'm fairly familiar with Lewis County. Have a lot of good friends that live in Lewis County that are business owners and educators in Lewis County. So I thought the time was right. After, you know, retired from MSU April 1st, and did some relaxing things for a couple months. Spent 2 months as a interim director of the Chamber of Commerce, and mm-hmm. kind of stayed busy with that. So I don't like sitting around, so here I go.
Yeah, I was going to say, you just retired from MSU, and now you're going to get back into the swing of things. And if elected, I mean, that's a busy slate. That's a full-time job.
Yes, it is. And that's one of the really good things for me at this juncture in my life, that being retired, I can be a full-time legislator. I really can, and be able to be involved, because one of my goals if elected, is to be able to dedicate some specific scheduled times to be in all of the counties. Obviously, I live in Round County, so it's pretty easy here. But I've had a couple meetings with the county judge in Elliott County. I'm getting ready for a meeting with the county judge in Lewis County. And what I want them to understand is that I will schedule time to be in their offices and in the courthouses in those counties to be able to see what their needs are. Because in order to make improvements for the district, for all three counties, I think I feel the state representative needs to be, if you will, in lockstep with the local officials, with the county judges, executives, with the mayors, with the sheriffs, with the clerks. And so I'm going to try to be able to do that on a regular scheduled basis. And then, obviously, when I'm in those counties, an opportunity to meet with constituents and be available to them too. I 26 years on the school board in Round County. I never shied away from an opportunity to be with a group of people. You know, I'm the kind of guy that I go to the grocery store and I talk to people in the aisle. And when I was on the school board, talked about issues if I ran into somebody there. So I'll be the same way as a state representative.
Now, whoever wins this seat will miss some of the 2020 legislative session, but I know you're already thinking about what's going on in Frankfort right now. Tell me, what are some of the things that you think are most important for lawmakers to address this session, of course, outside the budget?
Right. The budget is a given. I mean, everybody knows that. But, you know, the budget drives so many of the other issues. And, of course, first and foremost for me is public education. Public education has been so good to my family. My kids both went to public schools, got a good education. As I said, I was on the school board for 26 years, was chairman for 5. I think we've got to continue pushing to do more for public education. I am adamantly opposed to funding charter schools out of the public budget. I'm not, private schools are great. It fills a niche that needs to be done. Charter schools are a different animal. And I just think that we're already so short-funded on public schools that to pull money out of that budget and fund a charter school is just wrong. And I'll fight as hard as I can to prevent that. I think teachers need to have more respect. They need to get more respect, and they need to have more flexibility with what they do in their classrooms. You know, I used to hear as a board member, well, charter schools are so good because it gives teachers the flexibility to do unique and different things. Okay. If that's so good, then let's let the KDE allow teachers to do that now that are in public schools. I'm all about creative teaching. My son is a high school math teacher, and he's been very successful. And he likens teaching math to coaching a sport. You get better at a sport by practicing. You get better at math by practicing. So he's implemented some things in his classroom that have allowed his students to be very successful. Well, let's be creative and do that with all the teachers. And the one of the worst things that happens from Frankfurt and the legislature is passing laws that are unfunded mandates. Unfunded mandates are the bane of education. You know, Round County, for example, I talked with some people in all three counties yesterday. I'm familiar with Round County because of doing the budget here. Transportation. Laws require that if a child lives a mile or 2 miles away from school, then the school district is responsible to provide transportation. That's great. But for Round County, the transportation budget is underfunded by $1 million.
Really?
$1 million. So what does that mean? That means that $1 million has to come out of the general fund to be able to buy fuel, to buy belts, to buy tires, to buy school buses, because you got to have a safe vehicle to transport those, you know, those children. So that's wrong. That is wrong. And, you know, we hear, you know, the stories that, well, SEEK, the basic funding that comes from Frankfurt, SEEK is at its all-time high. Yeah, strict number-wise, it is. But when you account for inflation and when you account for those unfunded pieces of it and you have to use the SEEK money to fund them, where does it really fall? Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen cuts to, you know, Friskies, the Family Resource Centers. They're underfunded from what they should be funded. No textbook money that comes, you know, when I first went on the school board now 30 years ago, there was an allocation that came from the state that was for textbooks.
I don't think my kids who are in the public school system have textbooks.
They probably don't, yeah, because all of that money has been eliminated. And when you try to look at the other special programs that require funding and assistance for the kids, there's just no way to do it all. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm all about technology. When I was at MSU, I implemented a number of technology programs, from smart ID cards to tracking systems to you name it. Technology is good for the students to be able to use it, but it's not the solve-all. You know, we've developed, and the idea is that you don't have textbooks, so you can pull resources off the internet and use that in your classroom. That's all fine and good, but the teachers are so overworked already. How many of them have time to sit down in front of a computer and do a Google search for a topic that they need to talk about and do instruction on in their classroom? Mm-hmm. It's just not feasible. So those are some of the things.
It feels like our education K through 12 specifically is something that a lot of people have are really focused on right now. That's who was the loudest voice in the gubernatorial election.
Right.
And there's a lot of educators who are speaking up about these issues. Regional schools in, let's talk a little bit about higher education, but regional schools like Morehead State University have been really impacted by performance-based funding and the decrease of state support over the years in general. Are you hoping to address that at all?
I am. And performance funding as an idea is not bad. It's not bad at all. I'm all about, you know, doing a good job and be rewarded for it. I am. But across the country, the states that have implemented performance funding did it a little bit different than what Kentucky did. They appropriated a new pool of money that was available as performance funding, that you hit the marks on all the categories, and then you get to supplement your budget. You know, Kentucky went about it by pulling money away from everybody to create that pool that's used for it. And that's, you know, that everybody was already so thin funding-wise, staffing-wise, faculty member-wise, that really sets us back even further. And then when you know, Morehead State University, for example, the region of the state that we primarily serve, you know, yes, we have students from all over the state. Yes, we have students from outside Kentucky. Yes, we have international students, which is all part of making university life what it is. But the primary region that we serve in eastern Kentucky, you know, has the lowest go-to-college rate. It has the lowest per capita income, family income in the state, and we're trying to recruit those students to come to Morehead State. They 80% of our students are on financial aid of some sort. So the marks that are set for us, even if we hit every mark this year, we still don't get any new money because of the way the system was set up. So I think there needs to be a relook at that. I'm not saying, I'm not advocating throw the system out by any means, but I just think that there needs to be a relook at it, and let's have everybody back at the table and talk about what's the best interest for the kids, for the students. You know, and if you do what's, I always use this philosophy when I was on the school board, if you do what's right for the kids, then you don't have a problem. Because the kids are successful, they graduate, they go on to professional careers, professional schools, they're successful, they create a better, you know, form of living for their families. And there's a lady that used to be on the Board of Regents several years ago said it best, Jenny Fox from KET, Morehead State University and regional schools like Morehead State University in Kentucky created the middle class. Because of the number of teachers that we produce, the number of people that graduate and went back. Maybe they weren't going to be a teacher, but they got a business degree and they went back home and started a small business. That's the true middle class in Kentucky. And Morehead State University had a lot to do with that.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break here on Open Mic. We'll be right back after this.
Hello, this is Michael Green, and I'm a senior studying convergent media at Morehead State University. Thanks for listening to WMKY for local news and locally hosted music. We need your support during our spring fundraiser and membership drive. Visit our website at WMKY.org to make your gift to Morehead State Public Radio. Thanks for listening and for your support.
Welcome back to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Bill Redwine, the Democratic candidate for the Kentucky House seat in the 99th District. Bill, thanks again for being on the show.
You're welcome.
Outside education, I want to talk about something that you think it's important to address if you're elected to this House seat.
I think local control for county and city governments. I think that if a, you know, one of the things related to that is nobody wants to talk about increased taxes. That's a bad word. But there's some things related, you know, for example, in Kentucky with the escalating fuel tax, that cities and counties are directly dependent on that for road and bridge funds. Our infrastructure across the state is in pretty dire situation in a lot of areas. Being able to have that escalating gas tax and the county judges and mayors out utilize what it's used for to come back to those counties is critical. And, you know, they don't need to have their hands tied by, you know, anyone from, you know, from state government. We're going to limit this much. We're going to take this. You can only use it for this. They're elected officials. They're elected by the citizens in their community to run their community. So, you know, let's help them instead of tying their hands and restricting them on things. The other thing is small businesses. It's all great to have incentives, economic development incentives for large companies to come in and create job opportunities. We have two great opportunities going right now in Round County with App Harvest and the Cooperage plant. Those are tremendous. We've, you know, hopefully we're going to get Brady Industries, you know, that they'll break ground and create jobs, you know, over in Greenup County area. But there's the whole backbone of small communities is small businesses. So as we look moving forward, at some point, may not be in this legislative session, but at some point, there will be legislation for another tax reform. It's coming. It has to for revenue purposes. But I think part of that, we need to keep on the top of the list small businesses and small farmers and create some tax incentives for them that will help them expand their businesses. You know, if you have 10 small businesses and they get some kind of an incentive to increase their business, enlarge their business, and each one of them adds 5 new employees, well, you have 50 new jobs with that. Mm-hmm. And in a small community like Sandy Hook and Elliott County and Vanceburg and Tollesboro and Moorhead, 50 jobs is pretty good. It makes an impact. So I think we need to keep those things on the forefront and keep pushing for those and improvements.
Are you concerned at all about being able to pass those kind of things in a Republican-controlled House and Senate?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. And that's the other thing, Leanne, that, you know, for me as a candidate, I've been very fortunate in positions that I've held at the university and with the school board that I have a number of friends, number of acquaintances that are already in the legislature that are on both sides of the aisle. So, and I think moving forward, we have such a wedge that's been, you know, driven between people at the national level, at the local level and the state level. I think we've got to try our best to overcome that. And we've got to be willing to reach across the aisle and shake hands and compromise on some things. You know, yeah, the Democrats have their agenda and the Republicans have their agenda. I get that. But, you know, what made this great country as great as it is was our forefathers and after them being able to reach compromise. And, you know, some of my best friends are Republicans. We disagree on some things, but we're still friends. And that's what needs to happen in the legislature, is that people need to maintain those personal relationships and do what is in best interest for their constituents. And sometimes not in the best interest of the party.
Now, your constituents are, you know, include Brown County, Elliott County, and Lewis counties. Elliott and Lewis have much higher unemployment rates than Rowan County. What can you do as an elected representative to change that?
One of the things, I had a conversation, telephone conversation this morning with a gentleman from Lewis County. We talked just about exactly that. You know, Round County is, and Moorhead is kind of a regional hub. And we're very blessed that we've got these two businesses that are getting ready to open here, going to create 500 jobs. Well, there's a tremendous opportunity right there for people from Lewis County and Elliott County to apply for some of those jobs. And a commute from Elliott County, the furthest point in Elliott County to Moorhead, or a commute from the furthest point in Lewis County to Moorhead, really in today's world is nothing. You know, we have people that I have friends that live in Cincinnati, live on one side of Cincinnati and work on the other, and it takes them an hour just to get through town to go to work. So it's nothing at all for those, you know, for those folks to come here. I think that's one thing we can do, is work together to make sure that we develop a regional employment hub. I read some numbers last week. The census projection projects Lewis County and Elliott County both to have lost around 6% in population, but it shows Round County having a growth of about 5.5%. So, and that's been, you know, on the table for some time, with the projections that over the next several years, Round County is the only county in this area projected to have a population growth. Well, that's good. That's good for us. But in Elliott and Round and Lewis County, when they lose population, then that affects everything for them. That affects their tax base. That affects, you know, the school system. People move out, take their kids away. So the schools, you know, lose enrollment. Well, when you lose enrollment, that impacts the funding from the state based on your ADA. So I think we've got to work together, and we have an opportunity with those three counties and with representatives from some of our bordering counties. Kathy Hinkle, who represents Carter County and part of Lawrence County, you know, I want to work with her because that's a very critical piece of the puzzle, because Carter County touches Lewis County and it touches Elliott County, so we can all, and touches Round County, so we can work together to do some things like that. That's just, you know, not necessarily right in Moorhead or Round County or right in Elliott or Lewis County, but working together.
We've got just a couple minutes left on the show, and one of the things that I wanted to make sure that we touched on is, I know that you have been a supporter of Rocky Adkins in the past. He's a friend. You've known him for a long time, and he's held this seat for a really long time. Is there something that you support or don't support that may be different from what he's done in the past?
You know, Leanne, honestly, I really don't know. He and I have been pretty much on the same path and the same direction. We have the same conservative values growing up, in Elliott County. He was a much better athlete than I was. We played, you know, off the court, played sandlot football, and he was laughing the other day about we had some boxing gloves, and, you know, in the community, and there was, you know, five or six of us would get together and have a little boxing match every now and then. So with those kind of things. But I really know. I'm a Rocky Adkins. They asked, what kind of Democrat are you? I said, well, I'm a Wendell Ford, Burt Combs, Rocky Adkins Democrat. I'm conservative values. I don't follow the mainstream Democrat philosophies because it's not the way I was raised. My dad, as I said, was county attorney for 16 years, was involved in a number of campaigns, and he taught me the values that I try to live up to today.
Okay. And just to close out, I just have to ask on a couple of those hot button issues. Expanded gaming is one of the things that's being talked about in the legislature. Where do you stand on that one?
Absolutely. We are losing millions and millions of dollars a year to West Virginia, Ohio, Indiana, Tennessee. We got to keep some of that money here.
Mm-hmm. How about medicinal marijuana?
Absolutely. 110% in favor of medicinal marijuana because of, and I used to not be. I honestly used to not be. But I had a personal situation in my family with a cousin who passed away from pancreatic cancer. And he was so sick from the chemo and the treatments that he couldn't eat. He was in pain, and he could smoke a joint and be able to eat a meal and keep it down and be able to relax. And that changed my views on it.
Well, I appreciate you sharing those views, but that's all the time we have here on Open Mic. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Leanne.
Thanks for tuning in to Open Mic. Our show is produced by Greg Jenkins, and our theme music is Turtle in the Creek, composed by Galen Green and performed by The Looks. produced by Morehead State Public Radio with the generous support of listeners just like you. We'll see you next Friday.